our job really is to do ourselves out of a job, to make things so good for the women that we represent that there's no need for the Naval Service Women's Network. Actually, to do myself out of a job would be success.
I 100% have imposter syndrome. However, if I've got an opportunity to talk about a subject that's on behalf of somebody else, then I'm going to champion that right to the very end. On behalf of other people, that voice that you've got in that room can really help someone who doesn't have a voice at the table.
If something doesn't feel right, if it feels unjust or unfair, then it probably is. And it is worth challenging that policy or that attitude that is making that so at the moment.
Today we hear from two exceptional Royal Navy leaders, Lieutenant Commander Francesca Crosley Allen and Warrant Officer Kim Weitch, co-chairs of the Naval Service Women's Network. Fran and Kim both have full-time day jobs, which we will go into in the episode, but together they lead the NSN, a powerful volunteer-run network that champions inclusion, connects servicewomen across the Royal Navy, Royal Marines and Royal Fleet Auxiliary, and helps shape defence policy from the ground up. In this episode, we explore how the Naval Service Women's Network is changing culture and driving change across defence through policy influence, leadership engagement, and the lived experiences of its members. We talk about the future of the network, the importance of cross-service collaboration, and what real allyship looks like in practice. Fran and Kim bring clarity, energy, and care to everything they do, leading not for credit, but because they believe connection is where culture change begins. I'm Lindsay McDuff, the Culture Colonel, and this is my conversation with Kim and Fran.
So the NSN, or the Naval Service Women's Network, was set up over 10 years ago now by now-retired Commodore Ellie Ablett, and it was set up to help address retention, which is a problem that lots of the services have, to provide a formal access route for changing personnel policy for the better, and to improve the lived experience of a naval service woman. Now, that's really important because the lived experience will be individual to each separate person that you talk to, and it might mean to somebody that the maternity and paternity and therefore parental policy is improved, or it might mean to someone else that the hair policy has changed, for example. So there's a real range of topics that we deal with. But the network is there, much like the other networks in our sister services as well, to improve the lived experience of our people. And actually, we end up finding that we're just dealing with people issues. So people with a capital P, D&I, being a good divisional officer, making sure our team are cared for with what we call in the military duty of care. A lot of those issues are raised by women, but we find that issues are mirrored across our other networks, across D&I as well. So, for example, the LGBTQI plus network, the neurodiversity network, the race network.
And Kim, how did you find yourself involved in the NSN?
So back in 2020, I was deployed and extended in the Falklands during COVID. And while I was away, I stumbled across an invitation to attend a committee meeting, an open committee meeting for anybody who wanted to be involved in the Naval Service Women's Network. If I'm honest, I was a bit like, oh, this is not for me. Like, I'm not into the whole sort of bra burning, flag waving type stuff. But a friend of mine had said, oh, just please come along to the committee meeting. So I went to the committee meeting and I was really sad that I hadn't known about this committee for the previous 5 years, because throughout my career, I've always been the only female in a team, in an office. There are only 3,500 women in the Royal Navy out of 30,000 plus sailors. So to be able to then identify with a group of or a community of women that are perhaps going through the same issues as you, that's really what the NSN became about. It was about highlighting where policy changes could have a positive effect on everybody, not just me. I actually got roped into hosting and organising the NSN Awards in Yeovil, which you very kindly attended as one of my VIPs.
I was treated like a VIP. In fact, I think everyone was there was treated brilliantly. It was a fantastic evening. I loved it. It was fabulous. There was a royal visit as well, if I remember rightly. Can we set the context of what your day jobs are? What is it that you do in your day job?
So in very basic terms for me, I'm a warfare officer in the Royal Navy. So that means I was originally trained to drive ships. But then as a sub-specialisation of that, I've decided to go into meteorology. So I'm a weather forecaster for the Navy. Another way of thinking about it is I'm an environmental scientist. So in my current day job in my organisation, it's my job in every aspect of what we do to make sure we've considered the environment, what the impact of the weather is going to be on what we do, everything from oceanography, seabed cartography to space weather.
Did you know that that's what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I was very lucky. So at 16, 17, when my school was saying what kind of A-levels do you want to do, I really liked science and earth sciences. I then discovered that the Navy had this branch. It's called something else now, but it was called hydrographics and meteorology. I looked into joining the army. I did a weekend at Worthy Down and they made me jump over a 12-foot wall. And I said, no, thanks very much. But then I looked at the Navy where your skills were valued as much as you being an officer in the Navy or a rating. And I joined Southampton University and was part of the reserves there, and I actually had a reserve place to join Dartmouth, which is our basic officer training college, 2 months after I graduated with my degree in oceanography. And it's all worked out. I've been incredibly lucky, but it's lined up, and I haven't looked back since the day I did my entry exams in 2007, age 17.
Kim, tell us your route. Why did you join the Navy?
I was really, really fortunate, and I got a scholarship to go to a private school back home in Dundee. The way it was back then, because I'm a tad older than Fran, going to university was never really an option for us. You know, just as a family, you just couldn't afford it. But the stepping stone the High School of Dundee had given me meant that I had been part of cadets at school. I spent a lot of time down on HMS Bristol. I spent some time at Dartmouth. And then off the back of that, I just went, well, I think I could do that for the rest of my life. And so I joined up. 27 years later, I'm still plugging away.
If you were in the army, I'd be talking to you about now you're about to leave. What's your plan for your second career? But that's not the case, I think, for you, is it?
No, I've been fortunate to have been selected through the Warrant Officer Commissioning Programme, which means that I have basically got too old to be a rating now. And they want to take my expertise and they want to continue to grow that. And they think I can add value as an officer now. So I actually start Dartmouth next week and I pass out in a couple of weeks' time.
God, that's fantastic. How exciting.
It is.
Are you really excited?
I'll say nervous rather than excited. The thought of going back to doing all that drill. But I do apparently learn how to use a sword.
And what will you do after that?
So I'm going into a general service employment role where I'll be working in the mine warfare battle staff, which is part of the two-star headquarters where Fran works as well.
Oh, brilliant. So you'll be working in your day jobs together too?
In the same building.
Hopefully, yeah.
Oh, brilliant. How long have you been doing this job for?
So my current role at the moment I've been doing for 9 months. I've been in the Navy now for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I was first involved with the NSN formally in 2019, so 6 years ago now. And we're finding all sorts of people are being involved with the network, which is great. And a spread of junior rates, senior rates and officers as well, which is something we're really, really passionate about, having that spread. But I started the sub-network down at RNAS Coldrose, which is an air station in Cornwall, where I was based in 2019. And the reason I did that is that I came back from work after my first maternity leave. And regardless of gender, that's a really big change in someone's life. And I was visited by the then co-chair of the network, who's Commander Rachel Smallwood, who was just so encouraging. And she really filled me with confidence that I could start this group down there. I did. And then long story short, I became the co-chair of the whole network along with Kim 2 years ago now. And I've got another year in this role to go as well. We try and make sure that there's that changeover. Yeah. So there's two co-chairs and we swap them every 18 months.
And following the success of the, what we'll call a geo network at Coldrose, we've now rolled out and expanded that. And we've got smaller subunits absolutely everywhere. So we've got them in Faz Lane, we've got them down in Drake, we've got them at Commando Force, we've got one up at Digby, which is a tri-service one. We've now got one out in Gibraltar. Yeah. And that includes also like some of the other little smaller units like Collingwood, Portsmouth Dockyard, individual ships, stuff like that. But knowing then that we've got points of contact within the network at each of these outstations, and then also we've got a linkage then to the senior leadership team within each of those stations. Mm-hmm. It means that if you want to get buy-in for things like a D&I day or a mental health day, for example, up in Faz Lane, you know then that you've got good points of contact up there without then burning out the co-chairs or the secretaries or the girls that are supporting us.
That momentum is impressive. How have you created the conditions for that to happen?
So I think a key thing there is actually when I started as co-chair 2 years ago, I was based an 8-hour drive away. So I was based in Coldrose, and Kim and I had met maybe a handful of times in person. I was faced with a challenge of running this team remotely, some of whom I've still never met, especially if they're based in Scotland. I had to empower the team from quite far away. And I think that first year was actually very useful because I had to say to people, you're in Portsmouth, I'm a long way away. And at that time I had no sort of help with childcare. So I had to say to them, I need someone to go and do this on our behalf to represent the NSN. We're empowering you to do this. Off you go. I've since moved to Portsmouth, but that system is already happening. People are being empowered to go off and do their thing wherever they are. We're not just women. We're supported by some fantastic men. And if we may, I'd like to shout out to Captain Tim Grimley, who was on this podcast. He is our Royal Navy gender advocate and doing fantastic work amplifying our message across the force. And then also our male allies lead, currently held by Commander Ed Higgins, who's based out of Barrow and in Faslane in Scotland. And he's doing a fantastic job for supporting our women that are there in person as well. So it's gender agnostic. You just have to believe in improving the lived experience of the naval service women.
Can you talk about why it's important that it's not just about women?
The statistics are different across the services, but in any one room, 100 Royal Navy personnel, 90% of those will be men. Okay, but you've got to have the majority of people. So something Captain Tim does really well, he is someone that naturally gets it. And it's important when you're an ally or an advocate. He's got a real skill there. He doesn't take over, but he amplifies what we say. He'll use any forum that he has to push our taglines and our message, which is great. But also he will partner up with me, for example, when I'm giving a brief to our leadership teams that are going through leadership training, we will have a half an hour slot with them about the various different D&I networks or employee support groups that we have. And he'll be there alongside me, which means that although hopefully it doesn't come across that way anyway, it isn't just the world according to Fran, please support your women. Here's a Captain Royal Navy that's saying the same thing.
The role, function and impact of the network has been massive, not just around policy, but particularly around, I mean, Fran, I saw you were in number 10 the other day. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, we absolutely can. That was a real privilege. So I was asked to attend by the Warrant Officer of the Royal Navy. It was a public sector reception at number 10 hosted by the Prime Minister. And really it was to say thank you to those in the public sector, ranging from NHS workers, paramedics, teachers, police, and including some armed forces people as well, to thank people for the work that they were doing that's above and beyond their normal day job. So I suppose an important point there is that the network work that Kim and I do and all the rest of the committee isn't a dedicated secondary role. It is a voluntary role that we do regardless of our day jobs. And we often have jokes about sending each other late night WhatsApps and, you know, sorting out as much of this business as we can on the hoof while we're doing our day jobs as well. But it's the kind of work that I'm sure Kim would say the same that we'd do if we weren't paid for it. We're just exceptionally passionate about it and we feel it's very important.
I remember reading a quote by Lucille Ball, who said, if you want something done, give it to a busy person.
Yes.
How do you balance all of these things as well as life outside of work?
I don't even know if we do. I think it's just a case of some questions that come our way, you realise quite quickly are so important, and you just want to make sure that you have done everything that you can in your power to support the individual who's either asked that question or raised the concern. And so more often than not, you then go back and question, is it just this one individual or are there more people? So then you're looking at it whole force. And if we're looking at things whole force, then you just naturally feel that little bit more sort of push to want to get it and push it across the line. More often than not, family life takes a back burn, or I'm asking them to help me bag up goodie bags because we're having another event, or my sister's DJing for us because she's free. It's a whole community effort then, because they see how much value that it can add to everybody else.
I know that people who are passionate and committed to particular causes are often at greater risk of burnout. And there's a hint of that in the commitment that you've described. In my life, my wife is brilliant at telling me that I need to stop or slow down. How do you manage that?
I usually just tell Fran to stop. and I think that's part of why the balance of having an officer and a rating as the co-chairs working together, I think that's sometimes how that works so well. Because if we are doing too much, then you've spent enough time and you know the person well enough to be able to go, that's too much, you know, or give it to somebody else.
And another important point is that the co-chair positions are supported by two co-secretaries. And at the moment, we've got a team of four. So Leah and I, so Leah replacing Kim, and a big shout out to Abby and AJ, who are co-secretaries. They were both junior rates. And in the last 2 months, they've both been selected to become senior rates in their own branches, which is just fantastic and a really good example. Those other women that support us in what I call the senior leadership team of our network, the team of four that we've got, someone can always catch a ball for us. So if you say this week things have gone Pete Tong and I need somebody to step in for this meeting, it's actually rank agnostic. Those other women that are now stepping up to support us in it are just fantastic. We watch each other and say, right, if you're having a bad week, I'll step in and take over to do this, this and this. It's working really well.
Oftentimes there's no gap between work and home life. Are you doing well at that, Kim?
I think my kids would say no, and my husband definitely not. We've actually lived involsep, so involuntary separated, the whole time that we've been married. And that's for various different reasons, be that me in a deployable role or him in a deployable role when he was serving in the army. So we do try and find a special work-life balance. I've signed us up for the Royal Navy, Royal Marines charity Race Across the UK event, which takes place in September. So it's 4 days where you have to get yourself with no car, no Google Maps and no cash all the way from Edinburgh down to Dartmouth.
Really?
Yeah. Now, one or both of us is going to come home from this trip. We may or may not be married at the end of it. However, it's given us an opportunity where we're trying to raise £3,000 as a pair for the RNRMC, who have massively supported the NSN over the years. I just put a quick shout out to the group the other day asking what sort of thing the RNRMC have done. And that ranges from support to social events, for example, the NSN 10 or any of our award dinners. But one of the ones that came back with a resounding thank you was the support to the King's camps. And I know that, Fran, you use those.
Yeah, my kids go to those. It's great.
So I would really love it if any of your listeners want to get behind our team. We're called Ship Happens, definitely with a P. Ship Happens. Neil and I would be very grateful for any donations that anybody wants to send our way.
I didn't know the podcast was a great place to plug fundraising, but well done you. I know that each of the single services operate slightly differently, but all have gender networks. I understand that you are connected to them. How does that work?
There are issues that are particular to the naval service, but really we need to zoom out and see a lot of the things that our people are bringing to us as issues, as tri-service issues. So one thing in particular that we've had requests for as a network recently has been about PSTAT categories. Now, in layman's terms, that means the category that HR give you to do with entitlements and things that you might have access to through the military, such as housing.
And is this to do with what your marital status is?
Yes.
As well, I guess?
Yes. And we're trying to reflect modern society. So we are trying to be part of a PSTAT review where, for example, if you share 50-50 custody of your children, you should both, regardless of gender, have the same PSTAT category. There used to be a view that traditionally the woman would have charge of or attempt to have charge of those children for most of the time. And the man in the marriage would be seen as the deployable person. There are all sorts of complicating issues there, but in lots of aspects, we're trying to bring that up to speed. And that's a tri-service issue. So trying to give examples of where people are making that work so that it's fair for both parties.
And it's quite important when you're talking about dual serving couples, people who are married to other services or in long-term relationships with people from other services. Mm-hmm. When it comes to working with the other single services, we tend to come under the guidance and sort of cohesion within the MOD D&I team. Mm-hmm. And then within each of the other single services, the RAF have got a gender network, and within that, they've got a service women's gender lead, which is Warrant Officer Sim and Group Captain Vicky. And then from the Army's side of it, they've got an Army Service Women's Network and they come under D&I, same as the Navy do. And you've got Colonel Dodge and one Officer Haley. But I think it would be remiss of not to mention their predecessors, because they're the ones that we've worked with over the last sort of 18 months, 2 years. That's Group Captain Claire and Colonel Hannah, because the work that we've done with them is what put our voices at the table for the HCDC inquiry work.
I was going to say this was because of the House of Commons Defence Committee, what yeah. people call the Atherton Report, yeah. declaring interest here. I was in Sam DeForge's team when the government did its response to the Women in the Armed Forces report, which set out a whole load of actions that were to be taken. And my understanding is that you were instrumental in the crafting of those actions, and more than that, the implementation of them. Is that right?
Yeah, they came straight to each of the single service networks for sort of a bit of a clarity check. Is it achievable? And I know that there are still concerns over one or two that have not been fully implemented yet. But for the vast majority of the 66, I think it was, I'd say that 63 of them have all been ticked off. It just sort of gave you that little sense of, well, they're actually listening, or they're at least listening right now, which is great. And how that moves forward, we'll just have to wait and see how that expands in the next 12 months.
God, that's really encouraging. Because there was a time when that wasn't the case, that you didn't have access to the senior leadership in order for them to hear your voices in an unfiltered way.
And we do now. What I've been really impressed with is the Atherton report came out in 2021, but there has been constant, at least every 6 months, contact at ministerial level for us to have that formal feedback mechanism. And it looks as if that will carry on, which is great.
The Air Force has a gender network. Do you think that's a model that might work in the Navy?
That question has definitely been asked, and I think it's a really important question for our organisation to investigate in the next couple of years. I really like the RAF model. There was a quote by Gareth Southgate, who did a number of social media posts earlier this year, that the best thing we can do for women is address the behaviour of, in this case that he was referring to, young men. So you've got to have both parties involved. And of course, we all here in this room know that gender isn't binary. It's not just men and women. We've got to have all genders, no matter how people identify, involved. So I think that is a real future that we could look at. I think it's a good model. I think it's working for the RAF. And I think we should bring on board men. And if they want to have their own groups as well, then certainly allow that.
Where do you see the Naval Service Women's Network in 5 years' time?
My initial answer to that might not sound incredibly constructive to say, but our job really is to do ourselves out of a job, to make things so good for the women that we represent that there's no need for the Naval Service Women's Network. That's quite a blatant way of looking at things, but that is in effect what we're trying to do. But actually what I'd like to see is things brought on a par, so that we've got a level playing ground here. It's that difference between equity and equality. So removing all reasonable barriers and individualising those barriers to whatever you're trying to improve for people. So that actually to do myself out of a job would be success.
The conditions that need to be in place for that to happen, what would you say those are?
Complicated, complex. It's all to do with culture, which is a much bigger question. Everything from USB policy, which is unacceptable sexual behaviours, to just how we treat our people. I think when you start the culture conversation, particularly in the military, given some headlines recently, it can feel really depressing. But one of my secondary roles is that I'm a diversity and inclusion advisor, and I give the annual training that we have as an organisation. I think it's important to say to people, don't feel too depressed about this. As long as we're on a general upward trend, that is winning. There are levels of responsibility here, from the individual to the team to the organisation to, you know, the country and the culture that we live in. So as long as you're doing your part, I think that's the best we can aim for at the moment.
We often try and turn something negative into a positive spin. Yeah. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to share and spread the wealth and knowledge and the experiences of the NSN. But I think it comes back to trying to make sure that people understand that this is all for the good and benefit of everybody. Mm. The whole sort of messaging of the NSN now, we're no longer there to brabburn and to wave the flag on behalf of women's rights. We're there to make sure that everybody understands this is a whole force representative team that want to make sure that it's better for everybody.
And you referenced the need for culture work to be done. And I'm presuming you're linked in closely with the Royal Naval Culture Team as well.
Absolutely. So we're governed by some pretty firm policies. So JSP, which is a Joint Service Publication 890, that's my Bible. I keep a copy of it under my pillow. But that's our governance, which is our actual formal direction. And our mission statement we reviewed last year, and we did that classic thing where we got everybody in a room, actually at Yeovil in Somerset. We did post-it notes. We had 100 different post-it notes, and we brought out the key things. Inspiring through education, empowerment and positive change for the benefit of everybody. And when I give the brief to any audience about the Naval Service Women's Network, I then go on to say, for example, that might be your most junior DO, so divisional officer or manager, that has a female in his team with a delicate personal issue that hasn't been covered in his training. He can come to the network and say, hey, I need to support this person in my team who happens to be a woman. Or one really recent success story is the Navy has had a fitness test that's been completely overhauled and changed. And it's now more like CrossFit weight training. And some of our petite women, they happen to be women, were really struggling with that. So the chief PTI, so physical instructor that was changing all of that, we engaged with him. Their anxiety over it was recognised. It wasn't dismissed. We had really constructive physical training sessions just for women to get them used to all these movements and then practice and pass the test with success.
You're both well into this current role and you're about to finish, Kim. Are you sad about that?
Yeah, only because I think we can see day to day how much value you can add to people's lives. And so, yeah, I am super sad to give it up. But I'm also super sad, to quote one of the Sim, to give up my big badge.
I was going to ask what it is that you've learned since you've been doing this role.
Captain Kate Pryor, retired now, she did a speech about imposter syndrome a few years ago that I happened to be a part of. That was when we were just beginning to sort of lift the lid on what that looked like. And I would have said that I 100% have imposter syndrome. I don't like being in a room. I'm quite uncomfortable. However, if I've got an opportunity to talk about a subject that's on behalf of somebody else, then I'm going to champion that right to the very end. So I think that's the one thing that I've really taken away from it, is that on behalf of other people, that voice that you've got in that room can really help someone who doesn't have a voice at the table.
Are you getting better at doing it for yourself as well?
I think naturally you just end up talking about things that you might also be struggling with yourself, but you might not want to use you as the label. So, you know, if there's a topic that's quite close to your heart, you can then frame it in the guise of, or someone came to the NSN with this issue. Mm. And so that sometimes allows you to sneak your own issues in through as well.
Fran, what about you?
A couple of things. One of the major things that I found in the last 2 years, particularly in this role, is that I've discovered my instinct is often right. If something doesn't feel right, if it feels unjust or unfair, then it probably is. And it is worth challenging that policy or that attitude that is making that so at the moment. I'm quite an anxious character normally, definitely a people pleaser, but I'm discovering more and more that you're pushing on an open door to take that courageous first step to raise an issue. Kim's been fantastic in encouraging me to be a bit more brazen. I think we're a good balance to each other in that, but we've made some real progress in the last 2 years.
And what would you do differently?
I would be braver and more courageous. I am fairly constantly worried about getting in trouble. That's the element of imposter syndrome that I have. Mm. Everything I've done, I could have done perhaps a bit sooner and a bit stronger. So I'm trying to employ that in my last year in this role.
You've talked about imposter syndrome, both of you, and it would be remiss of me not to bring the spirit of Zena Everett into the room, because she's really clear about stop expending energy on doubting yourself, because, and this is a gendered comment, oftentimes men aren't doing that, and that acts as an inhibitor to your ability to realise your potential. What would you do differently?
I think I would have liked to have known about the NSN earlier in my career. I joined up in 1999. I didn't meet my first female senior rate until I was already a senior rate. On one of my ships, there were no female senior rates other than myself. And don't get me wrong, like, there are people that you could go to, but they didn't understand your lived experience. They didn't know what it was like to go into the mess and for the lads to have porn on the TV or a sign on the door saying, Kim, we're watching porn. And that was a daily battle. That's something that at that time you didn't necessarily realise was wrong. And then as you've got a little bit older and you've gone, oh, hold on a minute, that's actually not okay. And I just wish that there had been a network or a support construct around me that could have then said to me, that's not okay, mate. You know, don't stand for that. Or for others in that mess deck to then stand up and go, boys, do we have to put that on? So for other people to have then recognised that that was singling out me as an individual to then say, perhaps that's not the correct way of doing things.
The other observation I would make is that why should it be on you to do that? Because it's additional burden, additional armour that you have to put on, and you're just trying to do your job.
I think now we're in a much better position where other men in that situation would recognise that that wasn't okay. 10, 15 years ago, behaviour in the mess deck or in the workspace that we would now say is categorically unacceptable, you know, will be dealt with at the strongest standard. That wasn't necessarily the case. There are so many good things being done for women, by women, with women. And amongst all these daily battles that people are going through, we're trying to just re-energise, refocus, you know, turn that shift slightly onto a positive outlook.
I love a good quote and I get inspiration and motivation from them. Do you have quotes that you use and go to?
Yeah, I definitely do. So when I was a junior officer in my first job, I had some quite negative experiences being the only female in a wardroom on a ship. And it was really challenging. And one of those quotes that has stuck with me since that time and has led an awful lot to this work that I'm doing now is that you won't remember the words that someone said. You won't remember the actions or the things that they did, but you will remember 100% of how they made you feel. And I live by that in everything I do now.
It was Maya Angelou who said that. Great. It's one of my favourites as well.
Yeah, and I think it has been mentioned before, but that is so important to me. And I have flipped those negative experiences over 10 years ago now, and I absolutely use that. So sometimes we can't achieve the outcome that we want for somebody or on behalf of somebody, but we can deal with it and make them feel as if we care. You know, care is a bit of a dirty word in our profession. We're the military, but it's that care and compassion for our people and how they feel that is really important.
I heard this quote at a Women's Network conference a couple of years ago, and I use it all the time. And I say that your network is your net worth. I say it all the time, and other people go, oh, that's really good. And then a couple of weeks ago, someone reached back into the NSN and said, by the way, that quote that you use all the time about your network being your net worth has absolutely blown my world apart right now. They've helped me with some personal issues that this individual was going through. And we took that away and we were a bit like, oh, look at us. You know, we really helped this person, not because that individual needed that little bit of help, but actually there was a policy challenge that we were helping them change. So knowing then that if people could just look around them to the other individuals that are within their vicinity or within their reach, be that face-to-face, through social media, whatever, knowing that there are other good people out there that want to be able to help you and support you, then I think that we will end up in a better place.
Fran and Kim are the kind of leaders who lead with purpose and with people at the heart of what they do. Through the Naval Service Women's Network, they're shaping defence from the inside, whether it's influencing policy, challenging assumptions, or creating space for honest conversation. True allyship is active, humble, and consistent. It's about listening, showing up, and making space for others to thrive. Much of this work is done alongside their already demanding day jobs, driven by belief, not obligation. And that's what makes it so powerful. This is the final episode of Series 2, and as we take a break for the summer, we'd love to hear your thoughts on this conversation or from across the series. You can email me at theculturekernel@bfbs.com. And if you're in need of a Culture Kernel fix, our back catalogue is full of brilliant leadership stories worth revisiting. And if that's not quite enough, you might want to keep your eyes peeled for a special episode coming in the next few weeks. Thanks for listening. Take care until next time.